This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A couple years back, statistics master Nate Silver described himself as sexually gay but ethnically straight. That kind of statement has given rise to the idea that we're moving toward a post-gay America. Our guest says that doesn't mean there's no discrimination, only that people are defining themselves in ways that aren't focused on their sexual orientation.
So the question on the table is, as we move into a post-gay era, what does the move mean for America's longtime gay neighborhoods like Boys Town in Chicago or the Castro in San Francisco? Is the LGBT community moving out and everybody else moving in? Amin Gaziani joins us now. He's associate professor of sociology at the University of British Columbia and the author of the new book, There Goes the Gayborhood. Amin, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
So when we use the term gay neighborhood, what are we talking about?
Gay neighborhoods have four defining qualities. First, they have a distinct geographic focal point. In other words, locals and tourists can point these areas out on a map, usually by identifying one or two specific streets. They have a unique culture. LGBT individuals set the tone, character, or complexion of the area, which is why we see rainbow flags as we walk along the streets. They have a concentration of residences. While everyone who lives in these districts does not self-identify as gay or lesbian, of course, a statistically sizable proportion of the population certainly does. And finally, they have a cluster of commercial spaces and nonprofit community organizations.
Are there things that define a gay neighborhood culturally besides who lives there? You named some of them, but are there things that are more universal?
Absolutely. Certainly, in addition to the visible symbols, such as the rainbow flags, we know that it is in these spaces that sexual minorities create a unique way of life and expressions of culture and communities, such as the annual Pride Parade. They articulate a distinct political voice and vision in these areas. We know, for instance, the Castro District was crucial for the election of Harvey Milk to public office. They gestate organizations and businesses that range from bars to bookstores and community centers and nonprofit organizations. And finally, they find each other for friendship and fellowship.
Well, you yourself lived for a long time in Boys Town, a gay neighborhood in Chicago. And to use that example, what kinds of changes did you see there as being gay became mainstream?
I lived in the Boys Town district for the 9 years that I was a graduate student at Northwestern University. And during those years, my friends and I would have regular conversations about changes that we were informally witnessing along the streets. For instance, the presence of more heterosexual couples and families, changes in the storefronts. For instance, a sex store might close, a nail salon would open in its place. And finally, we would also remark on the increasing presence of straight people in gay bars.
Now, in Chicago, you've seen a move of the LGBT community in Boys Town, for instance, to the north, to Andersonville, for example. What is driving changes like that? We're using this, by the way, as an example of what's happening in other gay neighborhoods. But what do you think is driving changes?
Sure. Well, first of all, I should mention that historically, the LGBT community in Chicago has moved steadily northward for quite a long time. The community initially was concentrated in what was once known as Tower Town, or the downtown Gold Coast area as we think about it today. And then it migrated northward to Old Town, New Town, which currently is the intersection of Diversity and Broadway, and Clark, to Boys Town, the Lakeview neighborhood. Now there's a northward migration to Andersonville and even Rogers Park. In terms of what's prompting this, I think that some gays are being priced out while others are evolving out, if you will. It is certainly the case that areas that have large concentrations of same-sex households experience greater increases in housing costs compared to the national average. But I also think that there are cultural factors at play here, specifically the fact that we live in a time characterized by unprecedented societal acceptance of same-sex relationships.
Now, you write that gay people are pretty much everywhere in the United States these days. And is it fair to say that there may be these gay neighborhoods like Boys Town, like the Castro, but basically LGBTQ people live all over. They live in rural areas and urban areas, conservative and liberal states and neighborhoods, that there's not really the concentration that you might have seen once upon a time.
There is still a concentration, but it's not necessarily as pronounced. So we know that traditional areas of the city that we think about as gay neighborhoods, places like the Castro in San Francisco or Boys Town in Chicago, are in fact deconcentrating, to borrow a word that demographers use. When we compare the 2000 and 2010 U.S. censuses, we see that on average, both male and female same-sex households are now less separated from heterosexual households. In fact, gay and lesbian households reside in 93% of all counties in the U.S.
Now, are straight people moving in and driving out the old-time residents of gay neighborhoods, or is it just that as being gay becomes more mainstream, you know, those residents feel more comfortable being anywhere and feeling that they have the support that they need?
It's both, in fact. So there is a de-gaying and a straightening, if you will. So non-heterosexuals are moving out and straight people are moving in. In light of increased acceptance of homosexuality, many LGBT people now feel safer living in more areas of the city than they had considered in the past. So where gay neighborhoods once provided a beacon of tolerance in a sea of heterosexual hostilities, we live in a moment now where people feel increasingly safe living in many more areas than they had considered before. Similarly, as the stigma against homosexuality wanes, more straight people feel that gay neighborhoods present a viable option for them and their families as well.
Lesbians, you found, are often the front runners in establishing new gay neighborhoods. How come?
Lesbians actually seek out areas of the city that are affordable for them, in part because we know that the gender wage gap persists, and also because they're looking to live in areas with others who are like them. They will select areas of the city that are progressive, where they can plug into the institutions that already exist. For instance, theaters, coffee shops, bike shops, cooperative grocery stores. In fact, there's a sociologist in New York who refers to lesbians as, quote, canaries in the urban coal mine, unquote.
Well, your book has a question mark in the title. There goes the gayborhood. There's a question mark there. So I guess that's the question on the table right now. So do you see gayborhoods as becoming a thing of the past, or maybe moved into something that's more of a tourist category?
I don't think that the answer is simple or straightforward, if you will. These areas are certainly changing, and there's a lot of demographic evidence that shows that they are changing, along with cultural factors that suggest that both LGBT individuals and heterosexuals are reimagining their relationship with sexuality and the city. On the other hand, we live in a moment that have more places with a distinct association with same-sex sexuality than we have ever seen before. In fact, the diversity of LGBT communities is today matched by a diversity of urban and non-urban options. New Yorkers, for instance, talk about Chelsea on the one hand and a chocolate Chelsea on the other, a place that signifies special appeal for African Americans. Similarly, they trade stories about Hell's Kitchen on the one hand and Hell's Cocina on the other for the Latino LGBTQ population. And as we've just discussed, there are distinct places for lesbians and even aging gays and lesbians. So there's an incredible diversity of options that exist today.
Amin, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Amin Ghaziani, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of British Columbia, and he's the author of the new book. It's called There Goes the Gayborhood.